How do you pronounce this thing in the front?
Oh, this is called Fond de Cos, and we'll try to explain what that word means as we go along. It's a kind of a modern Hebrew concept. Good to see you, Dan. There was some mix-up about what day we were getting together.
Yeah, because I got here Monday night, so I thought maybe we'd move back to Tuesday.
Yeah, I actually sent it on Tuesday, but you got it on Monday. I don't know how that happened. How you feel? So for
my time is 10:45 Monday night,
which means it was really early.
Yeah,
early in Israel. Yeah.
So this is a halacha shiur. Of course, this Shabbos we read Parshas Vayetze, and the question I want to address, which is one of these modern contemporary medical ethics. Halachic medical ethics issues is somehow connected to our parsha, and if you went through some of the makoros, you might guess the answer as to how it connects to Parshas Vayetze. The amazing technology and the advances in modern medicine have made it possible for a woman to actually carry someone else's fetus for 9 months and give birth. We call it surrogate motherhood. So what it means is that you have a woman who either is unable through a natural means to become pregnant, or even if she can become pregnant, she's not capable of carrying the fetus for the full term of 9 months. So what happens is they take the egg from the woman. And outside the body, of course, this is already an old technology, but outside the body of the woman, they fertilize this egg with her husband's sperm. And after the point of fertilization, of conception, they're able to inject that new viable being or potential being into another woman who will be able to carry the baby for those 9 months. And I myself have first-hand knowledge of such a case of a woman, because she had tremendous back issues. The doctors discouraged her from getting pregnant. She desperately wanted to have a child. And the question is whether this surrogate motherhood could be a viable method. Now, our discussion really has to be split into two. One is, do we encourage such a thing from the get-go? Is that mutter, is that permissible, or permitted at least, or maybe even recommended according to halacha? But number two, which is the more fundamental issue, is let's assume a given. You know, there's a woman who is carrying the baby and giving birth to the baby of another woman's egg. And here the halacha has to determine who is the mother of the child. Now I have in front of me a tshuva of Rav Goldberg, Rav Zalmi Nechemi Goldberg. He's one of the heads of the Bati Dinim here in Israel. And that you'll see on page 1. And it's called Yichus Imos Pashtalat Ubar Berechem Shalacheres. So of course the concept of Hashtalah is when you take something from a foreign body and you introduce it to a different body. And amongst the various nafgaminis, la'alocha, he's got a whole list of them. I'll just mention a few of them. The most obvious of them all is to whom is the child going to be related? In other words, we have a mitzvah called Kibbud Eim. So let's just take it on a very simple level. And again, I apologize if this is bothering anybody. So is the mother, the genetic mother, who contributed the egg? Or is the mother the carrier, the surrogate, who is responsible for both the term of pregnancy and the later itself. Now, scientists believe that there's an influence on the child from both sides. That, you know, when the child develops for 9 months in the surrogate's womb, the surrogate mother actually, because of the chemical makeup and so forth, so on, actually has an influence on the child too. But those are all more biological issues. The basic influence on the child is no doubt the egg itself. That's where the genetics and the DNA structure is. But that's not necessarily relevant to our discussion. Our discussion is a pure halachic discussion. Who is the mother of this child? Is the mother of the child the genetic mother or the surrogate mother? Now, the most important nafkaminis is going to be not just in terms of the relationship between the child and his mother, but more important is the relationship between the child and other children that are given birth to by either the genetic mother or the surrogate mother. Now, I mean, you could even imagine a scenario in which a brother would marry his own sister. Because again, if you're telling me that the genetic mother is the real mother according to halacha, then the child, let's say it's a boy, is not related to a girl that's born to the surrogate mother. They have no relationship whatsoever. If on the other hand the surrogate mother is the mother, then he's going to have a relationship with his own sister. Obviously, this is what we call yuchsin. This is the critical issue here. And what Rav Zalman Nechemya Gold points out in his tshuva is that, you know, modern science has developed a technology that was not even imagined back in the time of Chazal, and therefore he's hard pressed to give an answer to this so fundamental question in terms of who is the real mother and how do you find the source in Chazal for this question. Now, there are other secondary issues that depend upon this issue. One, for example, would be Pidgin HaBen. Right? Pidgin HaBen is Peter Rechem. Well, what happens if the genetic mother has already had other children? On the other hand, let's say the surrogate mother has never had any other children. And this is her Peter Rechem. So, is there a mitzvah Pidgin HaBen in this case? There'll be an Afkamina in terms of Yerusha. Let's say this child inherits his mother. Well, who is his mother? There's also an Issa called Klala and Haka, and that's already an offshoot of Kibud Eim, and who's the mother, for which if he Chas V'Shalom wounds his mother, he's Chayev Misa. So all this depends on how we determine motherhood in Halacha. So what does Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg find? And if we have time towards the end of the shiur, I'd love to go through his tshuva with you inside, because there are a lot of subtle points here. But basically, he finds a source to this issue in Rabbi Kivega. Now, Rabbi Kivega lived 2 centuries ago, and it's pretty amazing that, you know, he couldn't find any earlier source. And the final conclusion, as we'll see, of Rav Goldberg, based on Rav Kivega, is that the genetic mother is the true mother according to Allah. Now, how does he see this in Rabbi Kivega? And the answer is that Rabbi Kivega is addressing an entirely different issue. There's something called chalav imo, which means that the Torah prohibits cooking meat with milk, but not all milk is included under this iser. It's got to be what's called the chalav of a woman well, I shouldn't say a woman because we're talking about an animal here, but a female that's Ru'uya Lios Aim. Okay, that's the Lashon of the Halacha, which you'll see in Yoredeya Siman Pei Zayin. What does that mean? Ru'uya Lios Aim, and who's being excluded? So the case is where they shechted a cow, a female cow, and they found milk inside the body of the mother, of the mother cow, of the shechuta. And the law is, believe it or not, that that milk, although biologically it's identical to any other milk that had been removed from the mother during her lifetime, that milk does not constitute and qualify as chalav for the Isur Basar B'chalav. Again, that's also on a deraisa level. I'm not talking about the Rabbanans and Marasayans, but Rabbi Kivega wants to know if that same halacha applies to a treifa. Now, watch this. In the case of a treifa, Chazal assume that although this cow is alive, it's not like the case of a shchuta where we discovered or extracted the milk after the death of the cow, but yet the cow is eina ru'uya laholid. The cow, because she is a treifa, and again you have to know all the details, but that's not for us now, does not have the capacity to give birth. And Rabbi Kivega goes back and forth vacillating as to whether or not the milk of this cow, again the cow is alive and not so well, but walking on fours, is that milk excluded like that of a shchuta because eina ru'uya ha'aim, eina ru'uya lios aim. In other words, how do you define eina ru'uya lios aim? Is it defined by the fact that the cow is dead, a dead cow, a shchuta, that's eina ru'uya lios aim? Or is it determined by the fact that the cow cannot give birth? In which case, even a treifa would be classified as eina ru'uya lios aim.
Sorry, what's the question? The question is whether the milk can be used that's found.
Can be cooked with meat.
Can be cooked with which meat?
Gdi, you know, the meat of a goat, of any meat, basically. Right, you're not allowed to cook milk and meat. But the Torah is telling you that not all milk is milk. Let's assume all meat is meat, you know.
When you said before that you can cook the chalav of the gedi with the meat, you're talking about the meat of that particular...
No.
It could be any...
Any meat.
Any meat.
Right. But the question is, when the Torah says you're not allowed to cook meat with milk, does that mean any milk? And the answer is no. The milk of a shchuta, which was extracted from the mother after she was already slaughtered, after her death, that's not considered chalav. That's called chalav shchuta. But the Gemara, when it tells you that chalav shchuta is not called chalav, vis-a-vis the Isur of Los Avashel, Gediba Chalevimo, the Gemara calls it Eina Ru'uya Lios Aim. Okay, because again, the Torah is talking about Bechalav Imo. That's the literal translation, you know, the literal nusach of the Torah. It says, Lo Sevashel Gedi Bechalev Imo. It's got to be Chalav Shel Ru'uya Lios Aim. It doesn't, again, you know, there's no limitation as to whether this meat comes from, you know, the same animal. It could be any meat. But the Chalav has to be Chalav of an Aim, or Ru'uya Lios Aim.
But I'm getting, don't we have to first answer the question of whether or not that milk is considered kosher milk to begin with, because it's coming from a tree?
Maybe. I don't know exactly, whether or not it's yotzim in us or us, or that's a whole different discussion. And then
you don't have to determine.
Again, no, as long as the species is kosher, then, and that's true for the shchuta, I mean, she's a cow. A cow is a kosher animal. Then the chalav is subject to the Iser Bishul of Basar B'Chalav. Now, you may want to know, well, since the Chalav is of a Treifa, maybe we have a Din of Ein Iser Chaliser. That's not relevant to the Bishul. Let's focus on the Bishul. Am I allowed to cook meat with the milk that was taken out of a Shchuta? Is the cooking itself prohibited? And the answer is no, on a Doraisa level, because it's not Re'uya Lios Eim. Rabbi Kivega vacillates, what about a case of a Trefa, who is a cow that although she can become pregnant, she can never give birth? The vital organs have been injured and punctured in such a way that she can't go through labor. Okay, let's just accept the reality as it is. And Rabbi Kivega's final conclusion is Yesh Lomar, the Trefa Re'uya Lios Eim. The Trefa is considered a mother. The Hayachol Lis Aber, because she can become pregnant. So you take a bull, and you mate a bull, you mate the bull, the male cow, with a female cow that's a trefa. And guess what? She gets pregnant. She'll never be able to carry whatever the full term is for a cow. I didn't learn the biology of a cow, and give birth to the calf. Or as the people at my AMIC learning center would say, the calf. Okay, I don't know, I can't pronounce it the way they do, but... They may be very sensitive to my American accent. Says Rav Zalman Nechonim of Goldberg, you see from this Rabbi Kiveger that an aim is defined not by Leda, but by Ibur. Not by birth, but by pregnancy. If a woman, or in this case a female cow, can become pregnant, that's called an aim. Even though, at the end of the day, that cow will never actually give birth to the fetus within it, to the calf within it. So therefore, according to Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, Rabbi Kivega's premise is that if you're trying to define an aim, which means motherhood, the determining factor is pregnancy, meaning the ability to become pregnant, rather than the birth itself. Dan?
But we are trying to define the aim, not the name. We are trying to define if this is the mother of that child, not a mother.
In other words, what you're saying is maybe Rabbi Kivega wants to establish the trefa as an aim in the abstract sense, but not the aim of that vlad.
Right.
Okay. Now, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, before we're going to see why he rejects this proof, quotes another source. This is even more contemporary than Rabbi Kivega, and that's Rav Yosef Engel. And Rav Yosef Engel, who lived about 150 years ago, wrote a sefer called the Beis Otzar. And in that sefer of the Beis Otzar, Rav Yosef Engel says that if you look in the Gemara Megillah Daf Yud Gimel, and the Gemara is darshaning the pasuk by Esther, because the pasuk says about Esther, Ein la av ve'em, right, that she was orphaned. So the Gemara says that after her mother became pregnant, her father died. So her father died when Esther was an embryo, was a fetus. And her mother died at birth. So therefore, Esther was born without parents. Says Rav Yosef Engel, Ubimos avia v'ima lachal olabas, etc., whatever it says there. It says, Me'achar d'chsiv ki ein la av'em. So why did the pasuk have to say, Bimos avia v'ima? Again, you'd have to go through the psukim to see why there are extra words in the pasuk, but he writes the lamdenu shafil yom echad lo hayala avim. She didn't even have for one day a father or a mother. Okay, and then he says the following. He says b'shoshen is abra ima At the hour in which her mother became pregnant with her, with Esther, Meis Avia, Nimtza Shelo Hayala Av, Mishoshe Nira Lihikaros Av. Rav Yosef Engel says that when the Pasuk says she had no father, it means he died before the moment that he could become a father, namely at the time of her Leda. She was already orphaned from her father. Her father died before the Leda. Ukshaldasa ima, and at the time that her mother gave birth to her, Mesa, the mother died. Velo nireis likareis em, and therefore she's not considered a mother. So Rav Zalman the Chevi Gobri asks the following question. I don't get it. Why do you say she's not a mother? According to Rav Kiveger, if motherhood is determined by pregnancy, then this woman was alive and well when she became pregnant. Again, the woman is the mother of Esther. And yet, Rav Yosef Engel says, when the Pasuk says, Lo hayala aim, since she died at childbirth, she was not an aim. In other words, it's the birth that determines the motherhood. Hare yesh chiluk bein av ve'em. There's a fundamental difference between who is the father and who is the mother. The father is not connected to birth at all. He becomes the father at the moment of Ibur, as soon as he impregnates his wife, he is called the father of that child, even if he doesn't survive until the Leda. Aval imos, when it comes to motherhood, haleda kovas velo ha'ibur. It's birth that determines motherhood and not pregnancy, and that's why the mother of Esther is not considered the mother, because she didn't live past the birth. Again, I don't know exactly when she died, but in any event, we have here... Wait, just give me 1 minute. Just to summarize, you may have lost me in the technicalities here, but the main point is that Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg sees here a machlokes, if you will, a debate between two of the great achronim of the last few centuries. According to one opinion, it is Ibur that makes the aim into an aim. That's the pregnancy. According to the other opinion, it is the Leda that makes the mother into a mother. And therefore, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg says, in his final conclusion, that there is no definite psak or final word here. And therefore, we don't have any proof. Basically, he rejects both proofs. He says that, well, we don't know if Rabbi Kiveger is going to tell me that after birth, if there's another woman who gives birth, the first woman is considered the mother of that child. That we don't know. We don't know if the Gemara Megillah is a clear-cut proof, because it's quite possible, he says, that we need both pregnancy and birth in order to establish motherhood. And if you get a chance, or if we get a chance later on, we'll go through this entire tshuva.
I have the same question, like before. Here we know that Esther didn't have her mother.
Right.
But whether or not this woman was a mother or not, that's a different question. So it could be that it goes by Ibur in both cases. As far as Esther is concerned, she didn't have a mother.
Okay.
Her mother.
So again, if we have more, there's so much to cover here in the very short time that we have. Go through the tshuva Rav Zalman Nechemia and see his pilpul back and forth. The bottom line is that he doesn't come to any definite conclusion, and he even suggests the possibility that you may need both Ibur and Leda in order to establish motherhood.
So
Joe, is it okay if I go on here? Can I ask you for mechila, but just that, you know, we haven't even scratched the surface.
First of all, David's going first, and second of all, I can't go on. I got to understand something.
Right.
It's just not going to work for you if you go on. Go ahead, David.
So you know what? Maybe for today's shiur, we'll just study Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, if that's okay with you.
As far as we
okay.
can, that's
all right. Again, because you know the real good stuff is coming around the bend. You know, the chief rabbi, Rabbi Lau, got involved in this whole issue, and he has a fascinating approach. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, so you say by asking your mother that she died during childbirth, but Esther wasn't really born yet by the time her mother died. So they told Esther of her dead mother, therefore she's not going to say her mother, she's going to give birth there.
So is that a question or a comment?
I didn't. Is that the Metzias that we said we're talking about?
Yeah, I think it's the Metzias is that at the time of Esther's birth, she had no mother. And the mother's not called a mother based on the fact that she carried Esther for 9 months, because at the end of the day, she didn't give birth to Esther as a live woman. And the key of keys to determine the motherhood of Esther's mother over Esther is the mother being alive post-Leda. If she's not alive at the time of Leda, then she's not a mother. That's the way Rav Yosef Engel understood the Gemara in Megillah, and it's all based on this extra drasha, which again, if you have the tshuva of Rav Zalman Nechemya inside, I don't have. I apologize. I don't have a Megillas Esther in front of me, but it says there ubemos avia v'ima, and the previous pasuk says that Mordechai adopted her, ki ein la av v'eim. Now, if you only had the pasuk ki ein la av v'eim, that simply means that Nebuch, she's an orphan, and Mordechai decided to raise her, or whatever the pshat is, marry her or raise her. But since the Torah adds, the Tanakh adds these psukim bimos avia v'ima, the Torah wants to teach us that that's why ein la av v'eim. And the Chiddush here is to teach us that since there was no period of time in which the mother lived post-Leda, therefore, although she was Nisabra mi Isha Zu, but that Isha Zu is not called Ima, and that's why the Pasuk says that Ein La Em, and she didn't have a father from the moment that this father could claim that he is her father. Fine, that I understand very well. So again, he really is the father by virtue of the Ibur. However, she cannot call him her father, because he becomes the father befoal of this baby when the baby is born, and he wasn't alive at that time. But the main point is kishialdasa ima lo mesa velo nires likares aim. She cannot be considered the mother of Esther, right? The pasuk says that Esther did not have a mother. Says Rav Yosef Engel, what is the Torah teaching me here by saying that she, Esther, did not have a mother? That motherhood depends upon Leda. And since the mother was gone, again, simultaneously with the Leda, whatever that means, therefore, she is not called the mother of Esther. Says Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, I see in the words of Rav Yosef Engel that in order for a mother to be considered a mother, she has to give birth to the child. Now, does that mean that birth alone is enough? Or birth in addition to the ibur, meaning the beitza, the egg of the mother. Those two combine to create motherhood. I don't know. In the case of Rabbi Kivega, again, I don't know. Rabbi Kivega seems to assume that you could consider someone the aim, in this case the cow is the aim of the calf, if that cow was impregnated, and therefore it is the genetic process of conception that makes the motherhood. Does that mean that we also need Leda? I don't know. And therefore, we have two rayos that go in both directions, and at the end of the day, it's quite possible that Yitochen, I'm just quoting the language here from Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, Sheshnei Advarim Be'inon Likores Eim Ha'ibur Ve'aleda. Maybe we need both, which would be really fascinating. It sounds a little bit like another religion, but we have here a child who doesn't have a mother. I mean, in their religion, I think it's a little different, but there's no Gzeres HaKosov that every person has to have a mother. You know, you could be born without a mother. I mean, the Maral created a golem, didn't have a mother or a father.
Can I ask you a question quickly?
Okay. I just have to overcome, you know, my my ambitions, you know, for this year. That's all. That's my own problem.
Yeah. Did you say that up until 30 days, not call the mother, it's not a bench out necessarily?
Excellent. Okay, we're going to get to that too. That's going to be a major issue. What about the first 30 days after conception? The Gemara calls it Maya Ba'alma. And maybe it's impossible to have motherhood over Maya Ba'alma. It's going to be one of the major svaras that we have to raise here. I'm glad you raised it, but we'll see if we get to it. What I'm going to do now, because we're so pressed for time, is I'm going to skip the main sugya right now, which is the sugya Yevamos. And if you want to study the sugya Yevamos and its repercussions, you'll have to turn to page 3. And it's on the bottom of page 3. And that's the case of a non-Jewish pregnant woman who converted to Judaism. And after she converted to Judaism, she gave birth to two boys, and the question is whether those two boys are related. They cannot be related by Ibur, by virtue of impregnation, because they came from a non-Jewish mother. But perhaps they could be considered brothers, as far as Ibur and other dinim, if they were born to the same mother. And you see that motherhood depends upon birth. And that's going to be this discussion on page 4, this very, very long and complicated discussion here called Aim Pundakis from the Kovetz of Ateres Shlomo Harav Aviad Trup. But since it's Parshas Vayetze, and I did want to get to a discussion about the Parsha, I'm going to ask you to turn to page 5. And you'll see on the bottom of page 5 that Rashi tells us an amazing thing about the birth of Dina. Now, we know that the mother of Dina is Leah. In fact, the Torah calls Dina Bas Leah. But Chazal tell us that Leah was never impregnated with Dina. How do you like that? How do you like them apples? Is this all familiar to you? In other words, initially, Leah became pregnant with Yosef. However, she didn't want to steal Yosef away from Rachel, and she therefore prayed that she wouldn't give birth to Yosef, and a miracle happened, and Yosef was turned into Dina. So again, the original pregnancy of Dina was not in the womb of Leah. You guessed it was in the womb of Rachel. So Rachel was impregnated with Dina. Leah was impregnated with Yosef. And now a swap. What happens is that Rachel receives Yosef because Dina in her womb now changes to become Yosef. Whereas Leah receives Dina, and now Dina replaces Yosef. Now, the poskim see an amazing thing here in this whole story, and that is that the yichus of the child, insofar as the Torah defines Dina as Bas Leah, depends not upon Ibur, upon pregnancy, but rather upon birth. In other words, even though, let's say if we talk about Dina, the egg of, you know, from which Dina was conceived was Rachel's, but nevertheless she's considered Bas Leah, because the surrogate mother, the giving birth mother, is Leah. And in the case of Yosef, Yosef is considered the son of Rachel, even though the egg from which, right, the ovum from which he was fertilized was that of Dinah, because Rachel gave birth to Yosef. Is that clear? An amazing, you know, that I just, as I said at the outset, you know, the poskim are really stretching their arm out, you know, looking with flashlights, you know, to try to find some source in Chazal to surrogate motherhood. And here we have it in Parshas Vayetze. It was right under our nose the whole time. We just forgot about it. Yechiel, if you're talking to me, you're going to have to speak a little louder. I'm sorry.
How does the Rambam... Just a second. Hang on.
The Rambam? Don't ask me about the Rambam. I don't know what the Rambam has to say about surrogate motherhood.
Ramble on with me. How does the Rambam interpret this midrash?
I don't know.
It's much more rational as opposed to
yeah.
Magical.
You're asking me an excellent question. I don't know. In any event, the one who really analyzes this whole sugya of Leah and her relationship with Dinah and Rachel and her relationship with Yosef is the Ratz Kitzvi, which you'll see on page 6. And once again, I had planned today, and if we have time, to go through the entire tshuva with you inside. It's really quite fascinating. And this tshuva is going to bring the is going to derive the opposite conclusion from the same story. As we say in Yiddish, punkfaker, just the opposite. And he writes, Yesh la viraya miledas dina adaraba, shavlad eino mityaches achar hayoledes, ela achar balas habetza. That motherhood is determined by the genetic owner or originator of the ovum of the egg. Why? Because he says that if you take a look in what's called the Balei HaTosfos, you know that on Chumash there's Rashi and then there's the Zekeinu Balei HaTosfos. So they write the following: Afal pi shelea yolda es Dina. Tosfos says that even though Leah gave birth to Dina, mikevan shetchilas haibur lo haisa etzla ela etzel Rachel, the impregnation took place in Rachel's body. Ein dina misyacheses achar Leah el achrei Rachel. Unbelievable. Who is the mother of Dina? The Balei HaTosfos say that the mother of Dina is Rachel. Shetchilas ha'ibur hoisa etzla, because the original fertilization of the egg took place in the body of Rachel. And how does Tosfos say such a thing? How is it possible that Dina is considered the daughter of Rachel? And the answer is, Lachain Yachal Shimon Lase says Dina Leisha. Who was Dina's husband? I got news for you. It was Shimon. Now Shimon was clearly and undeniably the son of Leah. It was her second child. How could Shimon possibly marry Dina? It's his own sister. Now, it's true that Yaakov Avinu married two sisters, but we never found anybody who married his own sister. I mean, except for some bad guys in Tanakh, right? But the answer is, Mishum shedina haisa bita shel Rachel, v'lachein lo havi achoso mina'em. So when the Torah calls Dina Bas Leah, say the Balei HaTosfos, don't be fooled by that. Dina is Bas Leah only to the extent to which Leah prayed that she would give birth to anyone other than Yosef, so that Rachel could give birth to Yosef. But in truth, on a halachic vein, says Tosfos, the mother of Dina is Rachel, and that's why Shimon is allowed to marry Rachel. Now, Rabosai, I don't know exactly how to figure this out, because Shimon and Dina, to the best of my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, had the same father. Is that not true? So that makes Shimon a brother to Leah, I'm sorry, a brother to Dina, mitzad aviv. Right? They share the same father. And the Torah explicitly says that you're not allowed to marry your sister mi aviv or mi ima. So I don't know how to figure this out. If you give me... Who?
All the Shvatim married their sisters.
Well, again, according to the Balei HaTosfos, they couldn't marry their sisters. So I don't know then. You know, you have to check this out.
From the father. They were only sisters.
Ah, okay. So for some reason, maybe... let's see. If... I'll tell you how it works. I'll tell you, I think, how it works. Again, Rambam says this needs a lot of study. But there's Kodem Matan Torah and Liachar Matan Torah. Now, Kodem Matan Torah, the Iker Yuchsin is Mina Aim and not Mina Av. And why do I say this? Because when it comes to Ben Noach, Yichus is determined by the mother. When it comes to Yisrael, it's a combination of both mother and father. So it could be that the Balei HaTosfos are cashing in or standing on the shoulders of this premise, that the fact that Shimon and Dina had the same father, that doesn't engender any Iser of Achva, of Achva Chos. But if they had the same mother, that would make it impossible for Shimon to marry Dina. And we'd have to therefore say that Dina had a different mother than Shimon. But how is that possible? Both Dina and Shimon were the children of Leah. The answer is that since Tchilas HaIbur was Eitzel Rachel, Rachel becomes the mother of Dina, not Leah. But anyway, it's quite crystal clear here, according to Tosfos, and you have to know whether anybody disagrees with Tosfos, that motherhood is determined by Ibur, by pregnancy. And for some strange reason, when you read through the poskim, and again, if we have chance, we'll mention at least a few of them in passing, the poskim seem to assume that as a general rule, again, there are going to be chumras here and there, but as a general rule, fundamentally, it is the surrogate mother, the birth mother, who is considered the aim. For example, if you take a look on page 7 of a Sefer by Rabbeisha Sternbach, which is called the Tshuvos VaHanhagos, you will see that he, although he accepts Tosfos in theory, but he says we cannot base any halachic conclusions on Maisen Nisim, on miracles that happened. V'ein lilmod halacha l'maisa v'maisa nisim.
What did I tell you?
Oh, that's what you meant by the Rama. Oh, I see. Okay.
Based on miracles.
Very good.
Bet to the Rambam said that.
Now, does anybody have access here, maybe if Yudi doesn't mind, to the Encyclopedia Talmudit? Is it on those shelves?
Yudi does not let us go on his internet.
No, not his internet. I'm asking at least Svarim over here. Is there an Encyclopedia Talmudit? Because I don't have one here. Anyway, in the Encyclopedia Talmudit, some of which you'll find on page 5. Let me just see if I can find in this big mess here, page 5. You see the bottom left on page 5?
Yeah, got it.
He's got a principle called Ein Lemeidim Mi'agada. He says, Divrei Agada Einam kedivrei shmua v'divrei halacha el kol ish doresh masha'ola belibo b'dvar doresh shari v'umdenayim l'fichach ein somchin aleihem uklalu she'ein somchin al agada v'yomru ein lemeidim min agados v'kosu rishonim she'bemokom she'agados v'abidroshos einam akhishim es ha'talmud shalanu el mosifin olav. So if you take a look in footnotes number 59, in the name of Rav Haigoin, and footnote number 68, I think it is, or maybe it's 66, in the name of the Note of Yehuda. We have here Machlokes, can we rely and derive halachas from Agados in a case where there's no conflict between the Agados and the halacha? Now, according to the logic of the Ratz Kitzvi, we don't have any clear source in the Talmud about who is the real mother. And therefore, there's no reason why we cannot use this medrash, especially the way Tosfos interprets this medrash, to derive halacha. The Note of Yehuda would say, no, you can never derive any halacha from Midrashim and from Agadatos. So Rabosai, is it true that there's no source in the Talmud for what's called fundikos? Fundikos means literally an inn or a host, right? A bala funduk is called a host. If I invite you to stay in my house, I'm called a funduk or my inn. And in the feminine, it's called a fundakit in modern Hebrew, which means that she, the surrogate, is really hosting someone else's fertilized egg. But what I wanted to point out to you on page 6 is the tshuva of the chief rabbi, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel, the former chief rabbi, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau. And he claims that the opinion of the Balei HaTosfos that we saw, that Dina is only considered the mother if she is the Balas HaBeitza, for example, in the case of Yosef, but not in the case of, I'm sorry, that Leah could only be considered the mother because it's her egg, genetically. But in the case of Dina, since it's Rachel's egg, therefore the mother of Dina is Rachel, that contradicts the simple, straightforward understanding of the Gemara in Yevamos. And the Gemara in Yevamos, and I think I have it here, on the bottom of what page was it? Page 3. Where do we have the Gemara in Yevamos?
Yes, page 3.
Page 3. The Gemara seems to assume that if you have twin boys that are gerim, now how could you have twin boys that are gerim? It doesn't make any sense, because if they're gerim, they're not related to each other. And the answer is harasam shalom b'kedusha v'leidasam b'kedusha, which means that at the time that they were conceived, these two brothers, there was no Kedushas Yisrael, their mother was a non-Jew, but at the time of their birth, that's called leidasam b'kedusha, the mother had already converted. And the Gemara establishes in Yevamos Tzadizayin Amid Beis that Chayovim Mishum Eishes Ach, which means that if one of these two brothers is married and he widows her, as he dies, then his other brother is not allowed to marry her because she is his sister-in-law. And that would clearly determine that it is Leda that establishes motherhood. So that these twins, since they were born to the same Jewish mother, are considered brothers from and sharing the same mother, even though the Ibur, right, which the Gemara calls it the Hora, when she became pregnant, could not in any way create a relationship between the two. And therefore, says Rav Lau, that we really now have a contradiction between two sources as to who is the real mother of this child. He's not happy about the Balei HaTosfos because he says, are you telling me that the mother of Yosef was Leah and not Rachel? Because the Tchilas HaYirayon was Leah's? he says all the mikros throughout Tanakh indicate clearly that Yosef was born to Rachel, not to Leah. Now, getting back to Rav Moshe Sternbach in Shuvas van Hagos, which we saw on page 7, he writes that Lamaisa, the Ikar Halacha is that the surrogate mother who gave birth to the child is considered the mother. Ha'ikar toloi bifunda ki'it hayoledes v'ein shum kurva, and there's no relationship afilu klishta, even a weak relationship, mikoach ikar zera ha'isha. The fact that the mother, the genetic mother, is the owner of the zera is totally irrelevant, has no significance whatsoever. However, he's a little bit, I don't know what word to use, a little bit second-guessing, what would be if the surrogate mother is not Jewish? And he suggests that in such a case, even though the genetic mother is Jewish, the genetic father is Jewish, the child is not Jewish because of the surrogate mother who's not Jewish. And therefore the child needs giur midina, not mihumra, but midina. Now this is going to be very disappointing to a woman, an Orthodox woman, who cannot carry a child for the full term by doctor's orders. It's dangerous for her. And she wants to give her fertilized egg over to a surrogate mother. The child looks exactly like the parents, has a good Yiddish neshama, l'chora, and yet the child needs gerus, which means that it's not related to its biological mother, to its genetic mother. And it seems that Rav Sternbach is not the only one who maintains that halacha. There's a yeshiva here in Israel called Noam HaTorah. The Rosh Yeshiva is Rav Mendel Shafran, and he too paskins that motherhood is determined by the Eim HaYoledes, by the mother who gives birth, the surrogate mother, and not by the Balas HaBeitza. So we have two poskim who go on record as maintaining that. But also what we haven't even gotten a chance to discuss, and we'll end here, is whether or not this whole procedure is halachically permissible, to enter into this kind of arrangement of surrogate motherhood. And basically, the poskim, like the Tzitz Eliezer and others, are worried about pirtzos bechomas hayichus, that if we encourage this kind of surrogate motherhood, then what's going to end up happening is that there's going to be all sorts of halachic issues with yuchsin, and it's going to create a pirtza in yuchsin, because we're going to always be confused about who is the brother and who is the sister to this brother. On the other hand, Rabosai, in the case of a woman who desperately, a couple, let's say, who desperately want to have children, and the only option is surrogate motherhood, it seems to me, little old me, that it doesn't make sense to discourage this simply because of a possible pirtza in yuchsin. You know, there were those who were opposed to, what's it called, Hazra Malachutit, how do you say in English? Artificial insemination, because they were afraid of pirtzas and yichus. But lemaisa today, we have such a thing. Now, Rabosa, I just want to give you a homework for those who might be interested in this topic, which is quite fascinating. We pretty much went through the tshuva of Rav Zalman Nechemia. We pretty much highlighted the tshuva of Rav Aviad Shrub, as well as the tshuva of Rav Yisrael Lau. But the best source, perhaps, for all of this is on page 9, if you can print that out. And that is a sefer called Nishmas Avram. And Nishmas Avram is written by a Talmud Chacham, a scientist, who is very reliable in his, and very clear and very clear in his writings. I think I have it here on my desk. Again, I'm not trying to hold you up. I just want to give you a little bit of a homework assignment. Again, it's Kedai to go through the Ratz Kitzvi on page 6 and also the Tshuva on page 9 of the Nishmas Avraham. So without keeping you too long, I just want to wish everybody a great week. And if anybody wants to linger on for a couple of comments or questions, I'm here.
Yeah, I have one, Rabbi. Why can't we go in all the Mishnas that the Rabbi mentioned in the beginning? Why can't we go to Kumara?
I guess. Yeah, Dan. At the end of the day, we're going to require gear lechumra. But keep in mind, when we require gear lechumra, if let's say the surrogate mother is a goyita, we're not saying that the child is not related to its biological genetic mother. We are trying to calm down the family, the couple, and say, this is your child. What we're saying is that, you know what? Because of the sugya in Yevamos, that seems to indicate that everything depends upon Leda, and here in this case, the surrogate mother was some woman out in, you know, North Carolina, right? Some non-Jewish woman. Therefore, we are going to require gir l'chumrah. But that's just the chumrah. I wanted to say the following. Dan, listen to me. I wanted to say the exact opposite. I wanted to say the following. When the Gemara says that it was Leidasa B'Kedusha, and therefore the two brothers, the twins are related, they're two brothers because they share the same mother, that's Dafka because their mother converted. When a mother doesn't convert, then as far as Jewish halach is concerned, she can't be considered a mother. Meaning, unless you assume, like Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, that you may need both. You may need both Ibur and Leda. If it's one or the other, my vote is to say that I don't care which way you go, but if the surrogate mother is not Jewish, then for sure it's the Ibur that determines motherhood. Meaning, you might say that Leda overpowers, it trumps Ibur. So the Hora is not strong enough to pull, you know, in a tug of war, to pull the motherhood in her direction based on genetics, when this other mother carried the baby for 9 months and gave birth to the baby. That's fine. But that's only if that mother was capable of what the halacha would recognize as a leda. But if she's incapable of generating a leda, then she's just an incubator. She's just a machine. Take a fertilized egg and put it in a machine. Is anybody going to tell me that if Reuven and Leah take their fertilized egg and put it into an incubator for 9 months, that the child is not theirs? It's only when there's another surrogate who's Jewish, she might, through her Ibur and Leah, claim motherhood. Possibly, which I don't even think is correct, but as I said, many posts can go in that direction. But you got to grant me that a non-Jewish surrogate, and I hope I'm not insulting anybody out there in the world, because I really respect this surrogate mother, and she deserves, you know, to get the best aliyah in the Torah, if she was only Jewish, right? And if we're getting aliyahs to women, which we don't. But I'm just saying, call a kavod to this surrogate mother, but as far as Leda is concerned, she's nothing. She is an incubator. And therefore, to tell me Geiris L'chumra, that's okay. I don't mind Geiris L'chumra. I'm also going to advocate Geiris L'chumra. But I want to convince the parents, the biological and genetic parents, that they are the parents of this child. That's my presentation. Okay, Rabbos, I will stop here.
Yeah,
Cool.